set.
This is the
Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast,
a podcast about worshiping diversely together.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time. Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast,
a podcast ministry of Madison Church.
Oh, I got
welcome to the Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast. My name's Eric, and I want to welcome you to this episode. You've been listening to intro music of I'm Not Here to Stay, recorded by the Gospel Music Workshop of America off their Live in New Orleans album. Well, it's been a few weeks since we've released an episode, and the members of the cast and I wanted to get together just to talk a little bit. We've just recently had a national election, and we hadn't been able to check in with each other to see how we are each doing. So we thought this really makes sense from a worship leadership perspective, because each of us is a leader in a congregation that is a mix of both Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. And regardless of how we voted as individuals, each of us as leaders is called to lead the entire church, not just the church that agrees with us. And this can sometimes be a challenge when some of the language used during the run-up to the election was very inflammatory from a racial perspective. So you're going to get to listen in as we share our hearts and our thoughts and our wonderings about how to lead a church during divisive times. So without any further ado, let's listen in to our recording. Welcome to the Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast. I'm here with full cast this morning.
Ooh,
so just kind of want to go around the circle. And for those of you that haven't ever heard one of our cast episodes before, I want to have everyone introduce themselves. So I'll start since I got the mic right now. I'm Eric. I'm a worship director over at Madison Church North.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Laura, and I'm director of multicultural living at the Square site.
And I'm Ata Obande, and I am a worship leader at the Square site.
And off crutches.
Yes, after 6 weeks.
And a new dad.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. Again.
So, how much sleep have you had?
Actually, sleep has been good the last few weeks. So
okay.
I'm not complaining.
Benicio's
cooperating.
Yeah, it's good.
He's eating. He's heavy. And I think that's allowing him to sleep.
I usually sleep better after I've had a good
meal,
too.
That's true.
Well, we haven't gotten to be together for a few, maybe a couple months,
mm-hmm,
actually.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking off mic a little bit and just kind of catching up. So we should probably do that on mic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's take 5 minutes and just kind of catch everybody up on, you know, what's been going on in your life, maybe in the last month or two.
I think I can start real quick. From the end of October to the end of November, I was in Liberia, West Africa, and working with the worship teams a little bit there, just a little bit peripherally, but we took a team from Madison to Liberia, to Providence Baptist. I'm still in school, and I feel like there's something else that happened this past month that I'm not remembering. But the big thing is Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back home since the end of November.
And when we're recording this, we're actually just a couple days before Christmas.
Yes.
So we're all a little bit in that. I'm not sure what's going on, but
yeah. Yeah, or I want to be in Christmas all the way mode.
We've had some fights over Christmas cookies at our house.
Oh, yeah.
So... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mom, you got to make more turtles.
I'm not there yet.
How about for you, Ata?
For me, new baby, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He's 3 months, actually just Monday. So that's been taking a lot of our time. We've also been dealing with trying to sell and buy a home. So that's been a big part of what's been going on. But then also dealing with this whole change in government that we are experiencing right now. So
yes.
leading worship through that has been a challenge, but it's also been fulfilling. So
yeah,
it's been an interesting couple of months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually what I was going to say for me as well. I've been teaching a class at Calvin. My other hat that I wear is I'm a social worker, so I've been teaching a class, and social workers are pretty political people.
Mm-hmm.
And watching how my students in their early 20s are responding to this, I gotta say it was traumatic for me as a teacher, watching people cry or not being sure if they could come to class because they weren't sure how, what other people would say to them. I had one person looking for make sure all their adoption records were straight so that they wouldn't get deported. And just lots of tears. So for me, as someone, I feel things pretty strongly.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a hard couple months, to be totally honest. So, although my kids keep telling me that I have to stop listening to the news so much.
Yeah. You can't hardly help it, though.
I know.
Right?
It's that little sense of control that you want to have.
Yeah.
So, if I hear about it, then somehow maybe I can react or something.
It's kind of like the Titanic. You want to know when there's an iceberg in front of you.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Even though it's going to do what it's going to do.
Yeah, it is going to do what it's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I got to sit in some really good debriefs in the weeks following the election with people about, how are you doing? In some ways, it kind of felt a little bit like 9/11, where people would kind of want to check in with each other, and just like people that you wouldn't normally even talk to, just in the grocery store line or, in your neighborhood, just kind of like, well, how are you doing?
Yeah.
I think I just wanted to check in with a ton of people right afterwards, just to see if everybody was doing okay.
Yeah, and I think being in a multiracial church, dealing with this issue, being in a church, period, then multiracial is very, like you said, leading worship, preaching, how do we manage conversations outside of the sanctuary, all that's, we need a lot of wisdom and discernment and working of the Holy Spirit to be able to do that.
All right, well, let's actually talk about that a little bit. We all were in different places when the election happened. What was it like, Adan? I know you had to leave.
Yeah, it was an interesting challenge. And one of the things I think I shared that morning was I've led worship in difficult times before. When there was a mass shooting or a bunch of, some of the police shootings that happened over the course of, 3 week span or whatever. So leading worship on a heavy Sunday is not something that I would say has been new. However, all of those heavy Sundays were Sundays where as a church we agreed that what had happened was wrong. So it's easy to lead worship in a time like that. Now, this is a time where people feel that same heaviness of, the people that were killed. But then there's another group of people that are ecstatic about what just happened. So how do you lead worship at a time where some people feel like this is just heavy and people are crying, people don't know what's going to happen next year, and then there's people that are, happy for the outcome. So what message does God have for the church at that time when the church is, in a sense, divided?
I've actually, I want to hear where your perspective was too. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. I really like Code Switch from NPR, and about the About Race podcast. Mm-hmm. I love listening to those, even though every once in a while there's a word on there that I probably won't repeat. But these are podcasts that are recorded on the East Coast. And I mean, with this election, we kind of looked at, like, okay, where are the pockets of people that, you know, really voted for Hillary? Where are the pockets of people that voted for Trump? Mm-hmm. In a sense, I mean, literally both candidates campaigned here the night before the election in Grand Rapids. We were on the edge between, you know, Trump land and Hillary land.
Yeah.
We're a purple city. And we are in the middle of the Rust Belt, and all these people are talking about the, you know, the Rust Belt and the disenfranchised, you know, white worker and all this kind of stuff. And that's where we live. Mm-hmm. I mean, all three of us, we're, you know, we have relationships with people that are really different from us. Mm. So, I mean, this is very relevant to our situation.
For sure, for sure. And we were talking about hosting a conversation, which we will actually do in February. We wanted to create a space where we can let people talk about their response, their lived reality, response or reaction to to the election. And when we were kind of planning it, there was a group of five or so of us. And we talked about creating a space for people to lament or to grieve or to express their fear. And then one person said, but some of us would like to celebrate and we'd like to be heard too. And so you've got that dynamic and everything in between in this church, in this one body of believers. And so how do we honor that? How do we give voice to the pain? Mm-hmm. And in a way that honors God and honors the people. I feel like that's where we are. When I was in Liberia and I was watching the election throughout the night, I had these waves of emotions. But what was interesting to me is the reaction of the general Liberian public. There was like this sense of what happened in America. Why did you people vote that man in? It was like a heaviness when I would go to different places. And that was intriguing to me too. Now there were a fewer spots where there was a bit of rejoicing and celebration. But for the most part, around the country, there was heaviness. I think even the president of Liberia, Ellen Sirleaf Johnson, or Johnson Sirleaf, I always say her name wrong. But anyway, she lamented publicly the results of the election. So that was an interesting space to be in as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's appropriate for me. You can take this out if you need to. But as an African-American away from the country and considering the impact of our president-elect, that I think you talked, I don't know if you talked about before we went on air, but considering what are the repercussions for different populations of people, even my brother who will be getting out of prison in January, who's a black man in this country. So what's the impact on immigrants, on Muslims, on black folks in this? So this feeling of fear, and the other word I used when I described my reaction or my feelings was a sense of betrayal. And I kind of feel uncomfortable saying that, but the betrayal, where'd that come from? Well, when I read somewhere that 81% of evangelicals voted for Trump, and I thought, well, wow. So how many of my brothers and sisters at Madison did, and why? And I'd like to hear why, because for me, I don't understand, but I know They love me, they love Jesus, and they have rationale for that that I think, I'm sure, is God-honoring. So how do we hear each other?
And this is the thing where, I mean, when we talk about bubbles, you know, I'm hearing lots of people who are discussing, you know, what does this mean? We're kind of in this waiting for the other shoe to drop moment where, like, we still have a black president. We've had a lot of, in the last few years, a lot more open discussions about racism, about white privilege and things like that. Like, this is actually something that, you know, you can talk about over coffee and it's not being considered rude. And this new reality that we don't exactly know what it's going to look like. I mean, for me as a white guy, I get to hear people have conversations that get my blood going. It just boils. And it's one of these, you know, how many of these battles do I want to fight? You know, is this the right time to say something? Is this the right moment in history to say something? And, you know, am I going to come off as paranoid? Probably. And I know that in general, I see the world a lot the same way, except on these things that are really critically important. I mean, if you're in cross-cultural relationships, it's hard to see the things that happen leading up to the election as, like, something that you can just kind of cast aside in support of other things that are also important, because it just cuts too close to the heart. And then to know that, like, I love people and I worship with people that don't see the world that way. It doesn't hold the same dread, the same fear. It doesn't cause those reactions. Like, people that are much more content saying, well, let's just wait and see.
And how do you, like you were saying, how do you lead how do you lead a congregation that's all mixed up like that in worship on the Sunday after this thing happens? Like, there's some folks who need to lament, and some folks who need to rejoice, and some folks who are in between, and God is still on the throne, but we don't want to throw spiritual platitudes at stuff, and we want to be real, like, we want to be relevant. We want to be a church that actually is in the nitty-gritty of what's going on in a God way, not one, you know, very, if you will, nonpartisan, but really, really about a God-focused way. How do we do that? And I think that's the,
For me, as I kind of sat through that time, that week, trying to figure out what Sunday would look like, I guess what I kept coming back to, as cliche as it may sound, is just that God is sovereign. And allowing myself to stand on that, knowing that, hey, there have been other times where someone has been put in leadership that, you know, where the people are split, but it didn't change the God that we serve. So there's that piece. But then, like you said, the other piece was setting a stage where, as believers, we understand that we have a church where there's people on both sides of the fence, and how do we facilitate conversations for people to understand each other and move forward together? So it's just important to know that, yes, we do have some people that sit right next to us in church that voted for President-elect Trump and are celebrating the fact that he is going to be the next president, as well as people that voted against him and are lamenting the fact that he's going to be president. So how do we understand each other and be able to move forward as a church united to continue to do the work that God has called us to do as a church, and not allow this government issue to be a wedge in the church and obstruct ultimately what we're supposed to be doing?
Can I ask a question? This might be like a white perspective question, but it's one that I have. Like, I've had a lot of black friends who have talked about the sovereignty of God is comforting to me. That would totally not hit my radar screen in this situation. So can you tell me, like, at least, not that you speak for everybody, but since you brought it up, like, what is it about God's sovereignty that comforts you right now? Or what's the perspective there?
For me, I know Dr. Masmo, there's a quote that he said where he said, God is more concerned with your character than your convenience. And I, as a believer, I have to trust that God is going to use this, however he's going to use this, whether it's individually for someone specifically or for some specific people, or whether it's going to be the country as a whole. My role is to trust what he's going to do and listen to. As a matter of fact, I think that day you sang that song, Trust End of It. Trust what God has in store and listen and obey what he asked me specifically to do. And that's all I can do. And so in understanding that, I have to sit with the fact that God is sovereign. And even though it might not be convenient for me right now, I have to trust that it's probably doing something for my character.
I was in it when you said sovereign. That resonated with me because when I was in Liberia and I was thinking, oh Lord, what does this mean? And when we regress like 50, 60 years as a country, and what's going to happen? And all the what ifs. And what I felt like God spoke to me is that I'm still sovereign. I'm still, ultimately, every power that is submitted to me. Every power that has existed, is existing, and will exist is submitted to me. And so I thought, well, that doesn't mean it's going to be easy, because Pharaoh was submitted to you, but it wasn't easy for the Israelites. The U.S. government back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s was submitted to you, but it wasn't easy for Africans, Native Americans, or Latin folks, or Asian folks. But you were still God. You were still in control. So your sovereignty doesn't mean it will be easy. But your sovereignty gives me peace in that I know that there's a purpose and a plan that you're fulfilling. And ultimately, whatever happens is a part of your purpose and your plan. And I got to trust that.
The other thing is, I thought it was one thing that I thought was funny. Not funny, but one thing that I thought was interesting was the day of the election, Facebook. It's like world news. but somebody posted something that said, it doesn't matter who wins the election at the end of the day, God is still sovereign. And I can't remember, but I want to think I shared that as well in a message. I don't know if I shared that specific message, if I just kind of put something up along those lines. The next morning, that statement was more true for me than any. Because before, it was like, yeah, whatever, whoever wins, God is still sovereign. And if I'm being honest, I was pretty confident that Trump wasn't going to. And so when the morning of January 8th, was it?
January 9th comes around. November 9th.
And I see that Trump has won. All of a sudden, I'm challenged. Okay, Atta, how much did you mean this statement?
And believe it
when you wrote it yesterday, when you thought things were going to go your way, and today, when it's not looking like what you thought it was going to look like. Was that something you just said because it sounded good, or do you really stand and believe that? So for me, it was kind of an interesting challenge to myself to say, hey, you know, that's the truth, regardless of, you know, what the outcome is.
And, you know, and I think as worship leaders, it's our job to help people still see God in the midst of very difficult places and circumstances, and to still help them believe that God is on the throne and that this is real. I mean, this is not anything we're just saying, but that it's real, and it's our job to help that be real to the folks that come into the spaces where we lead worship.
I gotta say, you guys are really challenging me in a good way. I've been very feeling stuck in my own thinking about it. I thought we had a really beautiful service at the North site where we had people write down how they were feeling about the election and that we were going to present our hearts to God. And we had people anonymously write how they were feeling, kind of coached them a little bit. Like, this isn't a time to kind of have an anonymous comment that you throw in. It's just about your feelings. And we read those aloud.
Nice.
And so that the whole gamut of emotional expression was up there. The struggle for me is, like, as a church leader, like, I get to cast a vote as a human being. And it's like most other areas of my life, I have a lot of permission to just kind of talk about, like, well, struggles are real. And, you know, this is when you don't have to, you know, air all your dirty laundry, but you also don't have to deny that that's a part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And in trying to be a leader where you know there's a broad variety of perspectives without saying, like, you're not welcome here if you don't agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually like it when there's people who, you know, don't let their disagreements keep them from having fellowship. And at the same time, it's been hard for me where I want to mourn and at the same time not feeling quite the permission to be able to do that, because I don't want to give the sense that on this issue, I need people to agree with me. And if you're going to come to the church that I help lead, this is one of those things that you need to agree on. It's hard to just be a person who's not wearing a leader hat to kind of process this emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's like, when, like, where I would want to do it if before I was on staff would be in, you know, with my congregation in a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, ooh, I kind of feel like that machinery is not really available if you're a leader.
Mm-hmm. If there has to be another space.
And that there's really nothing quite the same. I can't find a good replacement, so I feel a little stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Even saying that, I'm like, man, that already kind of like tips my hat about how I'm dealing with it, and I hope that wouldn't make anybody listening to this feel like, oh, we can't talk with that person.
But, you know, I want to say something too, that about talking about the sovereignty of God, that saying that does not diminish my awareness of I'm really thinking out loud, but it doesn't diminish the systemic issues that we have as a country that existed prior to this election, and who knows how they'll be affected post-election. But I'm not saying that God's sovereignty makes it easy for folks who are oppressed, or diminishes that the reality of oppression, of racism, of the isms that exist systemically in this country. I want to put that out there, that I'm not at all diminishing that. I'm not at all denying that. And I say in the midst of that, that God is sovereign, right? But I'm still mourning. There's still pain. There's still all of this stuff.
Do you find it easy to be able to, you know, both recognize your own heart's feelings and, like, and know that you, like, you know, where you are emotionally is where some people in the congregation are emotionally, and yet as a leader like, I'm leading the hearts of people that are very different than me. Like, one person wants to sing songs of lament, and somebody else wants to sing a song of celebration. Like, when you're actually putting together a worship set, how do you make sense of those two places?
I want to add another dynamic to that, if I may. I remember being in discussion with actually a mostly white group of Christians who cared a lot about the election. And I remember sitting there listening to them talk for probably, I don't know, 35, 45 minutes. And as they were talking, what became real to me is that this is a very intellectual experience for them, that they were pondering together what to do, what would the election be like. But it was like in this, it felt as though we were going to be impacted by the same moment. Well, it's true. We would be impacted by the same moment, but the impact on them would be different than me. And I felt it clearly because it was all in their head. But I was thinking, for me, it was in my heart and even in my physical person that I could feel something. And what I wound up saying to them was, you guys are like intellectualizing this thing, and I'm thinking about how am I going to live, if that makes sense. So I think there's also this group of people that, they may be rejoicing or not, but it's all in their head. It's not a lived experience that will be impacted, if you will. And so for those folks who are like, you know, what's the big deal? I don't get it. Or those folks who really care about it, and they wanna be a part of the solution, if you will, or a part of making justice happen, if you will. But it's all in their head. I don't know if I'm saying it right, I think that's that other group of people.
I think it's a different level of processing too. I think as white people, we're more comfortable a lot of times using an intellectual process to deal with emotional issues, but I don't think it gets the same result. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like substituting problem solving for taking time to feel things all the way through.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's mixed up in there when you talk about ministering to the folks who are rejoicing and the ones who are lamenting and the ones who are thinking and the ones who are feeling. All of that is in the mix.
Yeah. One of the things, you know, I thought about that as well. Actually, it came up the week I was leading worship, where a white friend of mine who voted for Trump, we were seeing all the reactions post-results and all the hate crimes that were happening and the marches and protests and all of that. And this friend comments or posts something on Facebook saying, why can't we get past this negativity and all this pain and let's just get to being one people or whatever. And I think that's kind of a situation where it's just intellectualizing these emotions that are happening and not understanding that we can't just fast back. Those are the words. What can we fast forward past this and get to working to be one country and moving forward? It's like we can't do that. We have to deal with the emotions, and dealing with emotions takes time. It's not just we'll sit for an hour, we'll talk through this, tell me how you feel, get it all out in the open, and boom, we can move forward and get past this.
And emotions that come from lived experiences. It's not just random feelings.
It's not just these emotions just popped up because President-elect Trump got in there. It's like, no, there's all these past emotions that have been, one of the ways I've been explaining this kind of the state of the country right now is I feel like the rug has been lifted. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is for years we've just swept stuff under the rug. And I think when Barack Obama got elected president 8 years ago, the rug got lifted a little bit. And now I feel like it's been, hey, here's what's under the rug. All the mess, all the nastiness that we've been kind of sweeping under for the last couple hundred years.
And claiming that we're a post-racial.
Yes. And it's like, no, here's what it is. And people want to fast forward past that. We can't. We have to work through. We have to have a lot of discussion. We have to have a lot of understanding for people on both sides of the issue. And I think how that plays into worship. As a worship leader, I think part of the reason why it was difficult to lead worship that Sunday is because I'm human. However, as a worship leader, which you actually brought up earlier, Flora was, when we just do what we need to do, and we listen to God and just who we are, God has a way of doing what he needs to do and being who he is and making worship what it is. And so when I put on my human hat and feel like I want to fix this, the burden overwhelms me, obviously, because that's not my role in this. God is the fixer. I'm just the vessel to kind of share what he wants me to share and then allow him to do what he needs to do. Because on any given Sunday, with or without a big thing like the election, we have a multitude of emotions walking into that sanctuary. Mm-hmm. There are some people that are celebrating and there are some people that are lamenting for whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have to lead worship for everybody.
Amen. And God is still sovereign.
Yes.
This has been a great conversation. We're going to have some more like this, and we've got another recording time set up. So I just wanted to say thank you to you.
You have been listening to the Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast. The opinions expressed on the Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast are not the official views of Madison Church, its leadership, or the denomination of the Christian Reformed Church. Madison Church is a member of the Christian Reformed Church and adheres to its doctrinal standards. The purpose of this podcast is to provide recorded examples of the kinds of conversations which we believe churches need to have in an increasingly diverse world. These kinds of conversations pave the way for a multi-ethnic congregation to design worship services with unity and justice, and truly worship God diversely together. Thanks for listening. Bye!
Do you have a comment, correction, or just want to say hi? You can do so. You can find us on Facebook or send us an email at antiochpod@gmail.com. Thanks.